and welcome to the ADHD Manual Podcast. My name is Abby Miner. I'm a marriage and family therapist, an ADHD certified clinical services provider, and a proud ADHDer. This is a podcast for people with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and those who love us, which covers pretty much everybody. Growing up with a colorful brain in a black and white world can make us feel like aliens. The manual we've been given to guide us through life doesn't have any diagrams of the parts we've been given. I've decided to stop throwing away my parts and start throwing away this useless manual to write my own. So kick off your shoes, have a seat, and take a break from fitting yourself into a mold that's not your shape. You belong here. Allies, welcome to the ADHD planet. ADHDers, welcome home. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the ADHD Manual Podcast. Happy Thanksgiving, if that's something that you recognize and celebrate. I hope you all are being safe today. And I know that being safe means not gathering with those we love, and in some cases. And so I just want to extend a hug out to all of those who aren't able to gather with their family and friends today because they are working to keep all of us safe. And I'm extending a virtual hug to you all. Thank you. Thank you for the efforts that you're making to slow the spread of COVID and keep us all around for more Thanksgivings. So thank you. I appreciate you. I really feel you. I'm not able to see my family for the holidays this year. And I know how hard that is. So I hope maybe this episode will be my gift to you, my embrace to you, and I hope it can be maybe something that can lift your spirits today, if that's what you need. It's very special today. I have a guest who I interview. Her name is Taylor, and she is a teacher with ADHD. And we had a wonderful couple of conversations. It was very, very difficult for me to trim it down so that it's not, 2 hours, which is what we ended up having in total. So I hope you enjoy it. She was a delight. And I want to say thank you, Taylor. Thank you for sharing your time with me and your experiences and your thoughts. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I really think that you all will as well. So, here's my conversation with Taylor. Hi, Taylor. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes. So, like you just said, my name is Taylor. I like to think of myself as a very outgoing, empathetic, caring individual. I'm also a teacher. I am a daughter. I am a sibling. I am a girlfriend, and I am a fur baby mommy. So, yeah, I have a lot of different roles, and I care very deeply about all of them.
Amazing. Okay, so who are your fur babies?
So I have two dogs. Well, it's my mom's dog, but my mom lived with me for the past year and a half. And that's Leo, and he's 85 pounds. He's on a diet. He's losing some weight. He looks so good. And then we have Ollie, who is my first. I call him my puppy, even though he's 4. He was a street dog for 3 years. And then we adopted him. And so he's been with us for like a year. And he is the light of my life. We also have 2 cats. And there's Sadie, who is a princess. And then there's Oscar. And he is just a little troublemaker. Actually, we call him the ADHD cat because he never stopped moving to the point where he would fight with my first cat, and we had to get him a cat wheel. You know, hamsters have hamster wheels. We had to get him a cat wheel and train him on it because he had so much energy and he would just never stop.
That's awesome. Oh my gosh, my parents' dog is named Ollie too. That's so funny.
It's a very, I like the name a lot.
It's great. It's very dog. So you said you're a teacher. What do you teach?
So I teach Spanish to fifth graders. I started out at the high school level, and high schoolers can be kind of savage. So I decided I wanted to work with younger kids. They're not as stubborn. They're a lot more emotional, though, when they're going through puberty. So I did another jump down to fifth grade. And fifth grade is like that sweet spot where they haven't hit puberty yet, and there's magic in teaching them, and I can just be my goofy, corny self.
Oh, that's awesome. So you started at high school, and then did you say you went to middle school before fifth grade?
Yeah, and technically in my district, fifth grade is middle school, the fifth and sixth grade school. So we have two middle schools.
Right. Awesome. So were all of those like jobs, or I mean, I don't understand like the whole student teaching and the, so like, did you try things out before finding the age you liked, or did you decide and then redecide?
So I did my student teaching, and I got an opportunity to long-term sub at a district because of a connection. And so I long-term subbed there for the last month of school, and I ended up picking up my first high school Spanish teaching position. And I taught there for a year. And then I ended up making the switch to the seventh and eighth grade middle school, and I did that for 2 years. And then I jumped down to where I am now in fifth grade, and this is my second year. So my fifth year overall, my fourth year in district.
Awesome. Okay. So you've been around the block a while then.
Yeah.
Nice. I bet you've learned so much.
Yeah. Especially with switching age levels, because you wouldn't think it makes a huge difference, but it absolutely does. Even the jump from high school freshman to eighth grade, and especially from sixth grade to fifth grade. Oh my goodness.
Wow.
That attitude, though.
Right? Man, that's what makes kids so weird, is that they change so much even just over a year. Does that mean that you also taught sixth grade since your school is fifth and sixth? Or do you just stay squarely in fifth?
I have stayed in fifth so far, but there is the opportunity for looping if that were something that either we were interested in or our admins were interested in for us. But right now, I'm like in fifth grade, although I do like the higher level content for Spanish, and I do miss it sometimes. So maybe I will be interested in looping or switching to sixth in the future.
So what about like your personal journey? Like, you know, your relationship with ADHD, you know, when you got diagnosed, if at all, and what was that like?
Yeah, so I love humans. I love people, and I love being around them. But me personally, I always kind of felt like there was something different about me. I always kind of felt like I was a little bit awkward. I kind of felt lonely, and like people didn't quite understand me and who I was. And sometimes I felt like I didn't understand me and who I was. And something that made me wonder if I had a learning disability or something like that, or maybe I was autistic because just of the awkwardness, and I like things to be in specific ways, kind of to feel like I'm in control in certain aspects. But also, I was always the last one to finish tests and quizzes. Anything that was timed, any kind of standardized assessment, the assignments that my friends did took them half an hour, 2 hours, and it would take me double the amount of time. And so for the longest time, I didn't know what was going on. My parents got divorced, and I started seeing someone for that. And I was getting started with the idea of grad school. And I was very concerned because I was struggling to get things done. And it was a very challenging time for me because I was having a hard time at work with a couple of different issues. And so I started talking about it in therapy. And I'm an advocate for therapy for everybody. I think everybody should go. There is just communicating and getting stuff out there. There is, I don't think there could be anything better for everyone. But yeah, just in terms of, we started talking about it in therapy, and my therapist said, I don't necessarily think it's just anxiety. I think you have ADHD and anxiety can be a part of that. And I was like, I don't know if I agree with her. But then I started looking into it a little bit and I was like, oh. And so eventually, as I got closer and closer to starting grad school, I decided that it might be worth it to try medication. So I started looking for a psychiatrist. I now go to an APRN. And we decided to start with trying to get my anxiety under control, because I was having panic attacks daily. I'd had panic attacks because of driving before. And I had a very long commute. Back when I was teaching high school, it was an hour each way. And that was tough. So I just had a lot of anxiety that I kind of needed to get a handle on, because ADHD meds can make anxiety worse. And so I have been on meds for a little while now, and it's helped me a lot. Finding the right one takes a while. And even still, sometimes you need to adjust and change that up. But yeah, I have this little side job right now, and I actually helped my boss for that side job go and start seeing someone again and get diagnosed. So I'm very grateful to the ADHD Manual podcast and everything, because not only has it helped me, but it's helped me help other people and recognize their symptoms and get the help that they need too. So yes, I am diagnosed. I'm on meds. I'm feeling a lot better about myself. Quarantine and this pandemic are really hard, but everybody's kind of in the same boat, and we're just doing what we can to get by.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, that's awesome. The ADHD evangelist. Welcome to my club. I dig it. So just to clarify, you're on meds for anxiety or for ADHD as well?
For both.
Okay, awesome. Very cool. And then I was wondering, in terms of like your decision to go to grad school, it sounds like maybe the diagnosis and treatment was a big part of that, maybe making you feel okay to start that and feel better.
It definitely helped me feel okay to go and start grad school in a confident way, especially because the program that I'm doing is 4-hour classes that were in person or online. So it depended on the week, and it's an accelerated program for teachers. And that was a big deal. I was just like, there's no way I'm going to be able to sit in a desk for 4 hours. I will not be able to do it. Never mind process what they're actually saying to me. So it definitely helped me become more comfortable with my decision. But it was something that I had to do regardless, because if you're a teacher in Connecticut, you have to start your master's within 5 years and finish within 10, or you lose your certification.
Wow. I didn't know that. Oh, okay. Yeah. I guess I was so used to like the counseling grad school of like, you know, it's pretty rare to be counseling before your master's. So you did your undergrad in teaching and then you started teaching
Spanish,
and now you're in grad school.
Mm-hmm. And now I'm going for TESOL, teaching English to speakers of other languages. I love it.
Amazing. So is that the class that you were doing with my dad, something to do with TESOL, or is it something different?
So one of the classes that I took was with your dad, and it was for TESOL, and he was actually extremely helpful in terms of just going through the class, and he was the one who turned me on to the ADHD Manual podcast. And I am so grateful all the time, because it's really just helped me grow and know more about myself as a human and try to work on the things that can be challenging with ADHD. So I'm very grateful.
Oh, that's sweet. Yeah. My dad is a me evangelist. He's so cute. He spreads it around. So does that mean that you, at least, did you tell my dad about your diagnosis?
Yeah. So I am an open book as a human in general. And there's a little form you fill out when you do, when you apply to have your accommodations, modifications, whatever. And they ask you, is it okay if we share your diagnosis with the professor? And I always say, yeah, because when I think about it, I'm a teacher. And if I know what the diagnosis is versus just getting the modification sheet or just that page in the IEP, I can actually go and look into it myself and learn more about it. That way I'm more knowledgeable and I can be more useful to my students. So, yeah, your dad knew. I talked to him about it a little bit. I used my modifications and he did not hold that against me, which is amazing because some classes, it's really lenient and the teachers, they just give you the time you need. And then other classes have hard deadlines, as if being a teacher isn't hard enough. And going to school, we also did it in a pandemic. So my whole class, I think, was grateful to your dad because he made it work.
Good. Oh, yeah. If he didn't, I was going to have a stern talking to. So I'm glad to hear that he was accommodating. Okay, so that's interesting. So you requested accommodations with the school, with the university or something?
Yes, and that was something that I had not done before because I got diagnosed later in life when I was like 25.
Yeah,
and I'm curious. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, you're probably going to answer. I was just curious what that process was like for you, requesting accommodations, because that comes up a lot.
Yeah, so it was a little bit nerve-wracking. I kind of talked to my therapist about it first, just kind of like what the process might look like, who I would reach out to. And it's actually called Student Accessibility Services at the school I go to. So it's not what you would normally think it would be called. But yeah, so I went, I talked to someone. I was a little bit anxious, a little bit nervous. I had talked with my therapist and my APRN beforehand, and my APRN had to fill out some paperwork. And then I went in and I talked with the Student Accessibility Services person we talked about what accommodations we thought might be appropriate and the differences between certain ones. And in my first class that I had accommodations, it was challenging for me because I kind of felt guilty about saying, hey, can I have some more time for this? And because I didn't say that up front, I got points taken off. And so even though I had my accommodation, I had to ask for it each time I needed it. And I felt that was tough. That was tough for me because it wasn't something I was used to. And I tend to be a people pleaser. And I kind of feel guilty about things like taking sick days or asking to use my accommodation. So I've had to kind of get used to certain things that are good for me and just be okay with asking for them.
Yeah.
Like mental health days. and taking them when I need them, because this whole process, it's challenging. It's hard just being a teacher in general, and then being a teacher who has mental health stuff going on and ADHD, it's like teachers always put themselves last. And I think a lot of people who care about other people and have jobs in those fields do the same thing. So you really have to learn to start being an advocate for yourself and having friends who will advocate for you when you don't realize you need to or when you feel guilty about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I really like that you differentiated mental health from ADHD. It's a tiny thing, but I was like, oh, I love that you did that. Just because it's, yeah, I don't really agree in lumping ADHD in with like mental illnesses, because it's not really, right? It's more of a neurodevelopmental disorder. It's a different thing. So I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Then it's kind of messed up that you had to ask for the accommodations you already asked for.
Yeah, so I had them, and then my specific accommodation is for extended time as requested. And I kind of hoped that it would just be in general, like lumped in for whatever I needed. But I guess a teacher or a professor would need to know when I needed extra time, so they would know not to penalize me for it. But I just had kind of hoped that I wouldn't have to ask and professors would just get it. But that was not my experience. I mean, it was with your dad was good about it, but there are other professors, that one professor specifically who I had multiple times, who did penalize me. And that was just kind of like a kick in the gut. Yeah. And that was hard and frustrating and tough, as if it wasn't already awkward for me to go and figure all this stuff out being 25 years old. I also had to double ask, as you kind of said, for the accommodation. And that was tricky. So I can kind of understand how that would be tricky for students, and how that would be tricky for students who are in fifth grade, because fifth grade, I've had students who didn't even know that they had ADHD, and their parents kept it from them, and they asked me specifically not to mention anything to the student. And as someone with ADHD, it just kind of, every parent does things for a reason. But if you have ADHD, you know you're different. So why not make your student or kid feel like, hey, there's a reason for this. You're not just messed up and weird. Because that's, I'm not saying anybody else is, but that's how I felt about myself, not knowing. And so I think not knowing for so long and just feeling different and realizing all these things and just picking up on the data and the things I kind of saw about myself, I wish that I'd known sooner. And I wish that I could have gotten accommodations and help sooner, because then maybe I would be in a completely different place. I mean, I believe that everything happens for a reason, or I try to, but I would not have struggled so much, and I wouldn't have thought so negatively about myself. And that's something that I've struggled with, and I still kind of can have that negative self-talk. So that's something I'm working on, but I think having it helps me be a better teacher for the most part. When I have a classroom full of kids, or not a classroom full of kids, because in terms of modifications, IEPs and 504s, it has to be less than half of the percentage of the class. So if I have a class of 20 kids, it has to be 9 kids who have IEPs, or I believe 504s are included in that, but it could be different, because IEPs and 504s are different. Individualized education plans and 504s are the accommodations for people who don't teach. Sorry, there are so many acronyms. But yeah, it's really challenging sometimes for me to teach students who also have ADHD, because if they can't focus, or they can't sit down, or they're having side conversations, that can be hard for me, because that sets me off, and then I can't think or finish my sentences. So before I was on medication, it was extremely challenging for me, and I would get very frustrated with students having side conversations, and they never knew why, and I didn't know why, but now I know why. And so I've been open with colleagues, because colleagues have been open with me about mental health. And one of my challenges isn't just mental health, it's also ADHD. And so I do talk about that to people sometimes, but I need to feel like I trust people first, because politics are involved with any position where there are a lot of people, and you want to believe that you can trust people, and I can tend to be too trusting. So yeah. I don't always tell everyone. There have been situations where I have told parents of my students if their students were going through a similar situation. And sometimes I've gone back and reflected with my friends or other teachers after, and they were like, maybe you shouldn't have done that. But I'm just trying to be real, you know. It's hard to navigate by yourself and with a parent as a student, never mind going through the whole school and your educational career and trying to navigate that. So I don't want people to feel like they're alone. And if I can help, then I'd like to do that. I just try to not have it impact my career in a negative way. So I always try to learn and grow. I think that's something a lot of teachers try to do, but it's something I especially have to do with mental stuff and ADHD.
Yeah. Oh, so much great stuff in there. Let's see. What first? Well, first, I just want to just hop back for a minute when you mentioned like adding or how like there's a phrase in your accommodation saying as requested. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wanted to like tie that up and because it sounds like such a small thing, but what you're talking about is like a big difference, right? Between like how comfortable you feel advocating for yourself in class. So is that something that you added or is that something that the school or the accessibility office added in there?
So I don't know if there's just an as general extended time offered through the school. I think it was as requested, or there were two different options. And they both involved different periods of time. But there wasn't really one that was just, hey, you don't have to ask. So I think that was a little bit challenging for me to realize because it was at a time where I was still dealing with something that was very new for me. And I wasn't necessarily super knowledgeable about what it meant for me in terms of who I was and my identity. And so to have to ask for something every time I was having a hard time focusing, it turned out to be more than I thought it would. And that was kind of hard for me to think about at first, and to realize how often I would lose focus. Sometimes I sit down and even on my meds, I'll just sit there for like an hour and a half and I'll try to get started and I just can't. And so it's hard to know, like, hey, do I need to switch up my meds? Do I need to find one that'll work for me better? And I had so many side effects with other ones, like excessive yawning. Only like 11% of people get that. And it was affecting work. Kids were asking me about it at school. My coworkers, they thought there was something wrong. I was literally yawning every 5 seconds and I could not stop. There was another side effect where I excessively sweated and I'm already kind of a sweaty human. But yeah, I was excessively sweating. There was one day I had to give a midterm to 90 students in the cafeteria and I was sweating through my clothes. I had to call my significant other and ask him to bring me a dress that I knew would not show sweat. So finding the right meds is hard, for sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Do you feel comfortable saying what those meds are, just in case other people are experiencing that?
Yeah, that's fine. I am on acetylopram for anxiety and depression, and then I am on Vyvanse for, I believe that's the brand name, for ADHD. And we tried some things first that were a little bit more mellow and not stimulant, that were also for anxiety or depression. And those just weren't working for me like I wanted. And Vyvanse is the first stimulant that I've tried. And it's also the one with the least side effects out of everything that I've tried so far. Like I said, I'm kind of already a sweaty human. Just my, what's it called? Hydrosis or something like that. Basically, it means you just excessively sweat. I think it runs in my family. and so it's not something that I should have to be ashamed of. Hyperhidrosis. There you go. So being on a stimulant is something I was kind of trying to avoid, but it's worked the best for me. And sweating is something I'm kind of used to already. So, whatever. You just have to weigh the pros and cons. One of the the acetylopram that I'm on now, it gave me really weird dreams for a long time. And sometimes I still wake up and I'm like, what the heck was that dream? Like, that was insane. And it'll put me in a bad mood for a little bit, but then the rest of the effects kick in and it's worth it. So weird dreams, okay, whatever. I'll just tell the people who I'm close with, like, this was a really weird dream, and we'll just laugh about it.
Yeah. Do you mind saying what the meds were that gave you those side effects of the yawning and the sweating?
Yeah. So I think I actually have it written down in here somewhere. So I tried fluoxetine and Prozac. And I think that was the one with the excessive yawning. And then it doesn't look like I have the other one in here. But okay, so here's the thing you gotta know though, when talking about side effects. I tend to take after my mom, and my mom in this situation, she's normally the 1%. If something can happen, that's negative. It probably will. And so, yeah, I kind of take after her in that way. So 11% of people have excessive yawning. I am in the minority. So you just got to kind of know your body and talk to either your APRN or your psychiatrist and talk about the side effects up front. Ask about them, because if you're going to be experiencing that, that's something you want to know about. So one of the things I ask about is excessive weight gain, because the med I'm on now, acetylopram, other people who I know have excessively gained weight because of it, and it can be harder to get rid of after. So that is something I asked about. It's not something that happens to everyone, and it did not happen to me, and it got me to a place where I felt good enough in my mental state that I could start exercising regularly. And so for the past 6 months, I've been taking meds for a lot longer than that, but for the past 6 months, I've been working out 4 days a week. And I feel so good. I feel so, so, so good. It's helped my mental health. It's helped my stress. It's helped everything. And I look and feel stronger. So I feel better about myself, physically too, like my ideas about myself, my self-esteem. There you go. That's the word. Yeah. I'm always forgetting words. And I am a Spanish teacher. So after I went to Spain the first time, I feel like my ADHD also impacted me, because I would forget words in English and in Spanish. And when you can't think of the word in English and in Spanish, but you know what you want to say, that's super frustrating.
Oh. Yeah, totally. And it seems to, like, you know, misrepresent how good your language skills really are, right? It's like, no, I know it. It's just like, I can't think of it.
Yes, it's so annoying, because it's kind of like you feel a little bit dumb for a second. Like, no, I swear I'm smarter than this. I know these words.
Man, that's kind of ADHD in a nutshell, right? I swear I'm smarter than this.
Yes. One of the things I did want to throw in there, though, was the RSD, right? Can you tell me what it stands for again? Because I'm spacing on that.
Oh, yeah. Rejection sensitive dysphoria.
There we go. Okay. So that is something that I didn't realize before you talked about it, but that impacts me in a huge way. If I feel like I'm being rejected, I kind of want to shut down in a way. And so my family, I touched on my relationship with my dad a little bit, but he is a narcissist. And so we're used to arguing. We're used to fighting. My whole family, like, we can yell about it, whatever. Like, we're used to it. So when someone is coming at you saying something that you take offense to, like calling out your character, and then you have ADHD and you're sensitive to RSD, that can make it hard for me to communicate, especially in a highly emotionally charged environment. So, and that's what I try to navigate with my boyfriend sometimes. If he says something that triggers me, I need to either not go into that fight or flight, because sometimes I'll just want to shut down and like run away, and other times I'll want to scream my head off. And, you know, any kind of relationship, you argue, and him and I are polar opposites. I'm a super extrovert and he's an introvert, and I am very used to my emotions and communicating them. And he is not as emotionally aware as I am. And so it can be very difficult navigating that. And I think I mentioned this to you at the beginning before we started recording, but we're pretty sure my boyfriend has ADHD too. But he is not super into the idea of therapy or meds. So it's really interesting navigating our relationship with all of that going on. But there's a reason we're still together. So.
Yeah, after like, 6 years, right? That's
6 years.
Yeah, very significant.
It goes by so fast.
yeah, for sure. I was gonna ask, do you feel that you've been exercising regularly for 6 months? You said.
Yeah, I had never been consistent before. It was always on and off, a week, 2 weeks, then I'd stop for a while. It was just, it felt really hard to commit, and my problem though was I was trying to do 5 days a week, and that was just too much for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm curious if you've noticed in the past 6 months, has your RSD gotten a little less intense? Like, have you found yourself maybe a little less sensitive, able to calm down faster?
I feel like with the pandemic, things are challenging, but in terms of my mental health and my physical health, I feel better than I've ever felt. Am I still frustrated some days? Do I still have to deal with that some days? Yeah, absolutely. But I've also been meditating too. And I got to the point with meditation where, just like exercise, my body craves it. And if I don't do it, if I feel like I don't have time and I push it to the back burner because I have to get all this other stuff done because I procrastinated because ADHD, and I need to feel like, I need to feel that pressure of, oh my God, I need to get it done in order to get it done. Sometimes I don't have time to meditate, and then I do suffer because of that. When I'm meditating, I have so much more patience. And on my meds, I've had a lot more patience, especially with issues in the classroom. But before that point, I did get myself into a little bit of trouble with impulsivity, with my family, with my friends, and at work. So. Yeah. But working out has definitely helped me in every single way.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Exercise and meditation. Yeah. That's a great point. Cause really like exercise is the only like natural treatment that comes close to how effective meds are for ADHD. So I think a lot of people would be curious if that helps the emotional aspects as well as focus. So that's good to know.
Yeah. I feel like I have more water in my reservoir to kind of calm everything that's going on in my brain.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that a lot. Or like, I see it as kind of like a longer fuse, you know?
Yes. Yes. A longer fuse. Oh my goodness. Yes.
Gives me a little more time before I lose it.
Mm-hmm. You can kind of create, and meditation helps with that too. You can kind of create space between what's happening and your reaction. And I think that's so important for people with ADHD. So I definitely recommend exercising. I definitely recommend meditation.
Yeah. Awesome.
I don't bounce my knee as much anymore. You know, that used to always be my thing. Yeah. So I would always, I'd be fidgety. And so I'd bounce my knee. Or
oh,
I would,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
B-O-U-N-T-E.
I thought you meant like hit your knee against tables, which is literally happening to me 60 times a day. So I was like, if we have a way to stop that, please let me know.
Okay. I fidget with pens. I'm doing it right now, actually. Anybody who has ADHD and is super fidgety, I just got these calm strips. They're literally called calm strips, and you can picket them if you're feeling so anxious, And you can play with them, and it feels like there's sand underneath, and I just like rub my fingers on them over and over and over again. And so actually I should probably do that right now instead of getting ink all over my hands from my pen, because I've gotten to the point with click pens where I click them so often that I've gotten blisters on my fingers. I've distracted my students. So yeah, the comp strips are awesome.
Wow.
This is not an ad.
Yeah, comp strips, sponsor me. What are you doing? So yeah, that's a great tip. I would love to hear more about, you mentioned a little bit, about like how your ADHD makes you a better teacher, right? And, how that, you know, both positively and maybe negatively affects your career.
So it gives me more empathy for my students and what they're struggling with. I understand firsthand how it feels to want to be successful so badly, and it just feels like there are things working against you. I love learning so much to the point that I am already planning, before I've even graduated from my master's, I'm already trying to plan second and third master's and like think about other, I want to stay in the classroom. I want to keep learning. I want to do well so badly. And I enjoy it. I enjoy doing well. I enjoy learning, I enjoy collaborating and talking and just being in that environment. But when I can't sit down and think to do my homework, that there's a little bit of a feeling of failure there, because that's part of my grade. And so also the feeling of needing to sit down and get something done. And oh yeah, my friend said that this is going to take half an hour to an hour, and it takes me four. That is really hard to deal with if you're not super secure with who you are and your identity, and knowing that this is a part of you and that's okay. I mean, it's frustrating some days, because all I want to do is well. All I want to be is successful. And so thinking about my students who are younger than me, who don't have a handle on it yet, and don't know how to advocate for themselves, because fifth graders don't know how to advocate for themselves yet, unless they're super mature and accelerated in that department. But they might not know how to communicate to their parents what they're feeling. I've had students come up to me before and tell me things that they hadn't even told their parents about their mental health, about other things, about sitting down and working. And so me having ADHD and other things going on for me that are challenging helps me understand how my students are feeling. And so that gives me more empathy for them. That makes me think about them. And teaching is really frustrating, but ultimately at the end of the day, we're all just walking each other home. And that's a quote by Ram Dass. And I got that from Dr. Jody Carrington. And, through Get Your Teach On. And it's a great resource for all teachers, but people who just want growth in general. And I just want to help people. And having ADHD helps me do that. And it helps me understand how challenging it can be for kids. Because as a teacher, it can be really easy to forget and to just put yourself in your teaching role and to not have that empathy sometimes. And when your fuse is short and you're tired and you're teaching through a pandemic and your mask is all sweaty and this kid just won't sit down, you got to remember, hey, this is you too. You're standing right now, so you're lucky. You don't have to bounce your knee right now. You don't have to mess with your pen because you're up and walking around the classroom. But these kids are all sitting and they might be tired. And so that kid who's up there running around might be trying to keep himself from falling asleep. So you need to have some compassion and some empathy and just figure out a way to make it work for him. And that's what all teachers need to do for students who have IEPs or 504s, accommodations, modifications, especially your students with ADHD. You need to make it so they don't feel like failures, because they're not. They're just, their brains are set up different, just like you say in your intro for each podcast. It's just a different kind of brain, and people need to be more understanding of it. And so if they don't understand, then we have to educate them like you do, literally in your podcast and on your website. And it's so important to spread awareness, because yes, ADHD is more well known than other things, but so many people still don't know and understand. They think it's just, oh, this kid can't sit down. No, it's also RSD and the interest-based nervous system and being super hyper emotional and sensitive with that. And different people have different things. So you got to get to know your students, but you have to work with them. You have to do whatever it takes. And so one of the things that I really enjoy doing is working one-on-one with students. If I can get them to that point where I can remove all of the distractions and just work with them, I'm going to do that. And I did that with some of my students during the pandemic. None of their adults were able during the week to sit down and help them. So I would do Zoom calls, not Zoom, we use Google Meets, but I would do Google Meets on the weekends because it meant that I could help this kid with ADHD and I could sit down and talk with him and his mom and just get rid of all the distractions. You can't learn in the classroom? Okay, I need you to not distract the other kids, but I'm going to find a time to work with you when it does work for you, because that's what I would have wanted out of a teacher. Mm-hmm. So you just got to figure out a way to make it work.
Yeah. I'm curious, like, does having ADHD affect the way, I mean, you said that you do things differently because of your ADHD, like with the empathy and working one-on-one. Your cat.
That's Sadie. I talked about her at the beginning.
Hi, Sadie. Oh my gosh, she's beautiful.
Thank you.
Wow.
She was a street cat also too. And we did not get her as a kitten, so she does not mold easy. She does what she wants.
As she should.
Yeah.
She looks like royalty. Yeah.
Thank you.
Where was I?
So you were asking about doing things different because of ADHD.
Yeah. I'm curious if you have developed any, like, because, you know, every teacher has their own kind of, like, culture in their classroom, right? And the way that they tend to do things. And I'm curious if ADHD has shaped the way that you either, like, the practices you use in your classroom or the way you grade.
So it's tricky because I used to have a classroom when I taught high school and when I taught at the higher middle school level, but I don't have a classroom anymore because I'm a special teacher. It's hard being a special teacher. I was on a cart before the pandemic happened, and now the teachers at my school it's set up like the elementary model of education. So instead of having things specialized, where like we have an English, math, science, and social studies teacher, our teachers are now teaching all subjects, and I push into their classrooms to minimize the amount of movement that the students are doing around the building. So it was hard before, but it's even harder now.
Oh my God.
For them.
And you too. Oh my God. Having to
I have five different classrooms. I had five different classrooms last year, but I had a cart that I could push around, and that was easy and that was hard. But I'm loving now that everything is so internet focused and based. It makes, so for example, I have Google Classroom and I can literally attach a rubric in Google Classroom. So I don't have to print out 100 or 200 pages or whatever, and the kids don't have to worry about losing it. So I try to make things easier for them, for sure. I know, hey, if I'm going to forget something, yeah, they're going to forget it. So I have to figure out a way to make it so we all remember. For me, it's always about making sure that I get to everything I need to in a lesson. And so I used to write stuff on the board when I had my own classroom. I put stuff in the PowerPoints, in the presentations. I need to remember things and not forget them in the moment because there's so many things going on when you're teaching. One kid is asking to go to the bathroom. Another kid is having a side conversation. One kid is super sleepy. Another kid is super emotional. There are a million different things going on. Maybe your vice principal walks by. You got to remember these things and you got to look good, especially when people walk by and they stop in your classroom and you're getting observed. I mean, you're always trying your hardest, but there are certain boxes you need to check in order to be considered an effective teacher. And so you gotta remember those things, especially when there are people there watching you. So it does change what I do about around my classroom, absolutely. As I've moved younger with teaching, you have to offer more choices. You have to give them the opportunity to demonstrate their learning, because maybe they're having a bad day. Maybe they just had a huge argument. Maybe a kid said that they want to fight them at the end of the school day, and they're thinking about that, and so they're not going to do their best. So you have to give them opportunities to show that they can do their best, because emotional regulation is not something that fifth graders are super accomplished at yet. So there's a lot of crying. There's a lot of kids getting angry. There's a lot of behavior things and arguing with other kids and kids touching other kids. And he's touching me. He's looking at me. I actually, this past quarter, I had one kid scream, "He's looking at me." He had ADHD and he couldn't let it go. So we had to change up his environment. But yeah, for sure, I change the way I do things. And my grading is, I've had to learn to be more lenient just because of the lower level of students. And kids are going to make mistakes, especially fifth grade kids, because they're babies. They're so young. And I don't mean that in a looking down on them way. I mean it in a, they are so young. And they try to act like they're not. And sometimes you forget, but they definitely don't have everything together. So you gotta be kind. And you gotta give them lots of chances.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in grading.
Yeah.
As long as they don't turn it in right before grades are due, I love it. Sure. Do it as many times as you want. I'm here to help you, because if they repeat it, it's gonna help them learn it. So why not?
Okay, yeah, that's a great example. Like allowing students to redo things they didn't do well on the first time. Is that what you mean?
Exactly. Yeah. So in Spanish, their accents, little flashes over the letters, and that can change the meaning of the word. So for example, if you have A-N-O with a squiggle over the N, it means year or years, talking about how old you are, right? But if that squiggle goes away, it means but. So if they don't put the accent, they're saying, "I have 10 butts," instead of "I have 10 years. So they're going to learn that if they have to repeat it a million times, or if they redo that assignment twice, you know, they're going to remember. So if I let them redo something, why not? Repetition helps people remember stuff. And if they remember stuff, that's awesome. And what do I really want my students to get out of their experience with me? I want them to feel like they've become a better human. I want them to feel like they've grown in a way. Spanish is not for everybody. Language is not for everybody. Do I think everybody can learn? Yes. But is it going to be a lot more challenging for some students than others? Absolutely. Like, I'm an emotional person. I love English. I love open-ended answers. Language was hard for me. Language is like math. It's literally formulas. And so I think it's really funny that I got into something where it's not easy for me at all. But I do it because I like communicating with people and I like culture and I want to help humans. And so that's why I do it. You got to be interested in what you're doing. But one of the things that you talked about in your podcast last time was, how do you help a kid who's not super interested in what they're doing and getting their dopamine up and with the foods? And it's so funny because I need protein and peanut butter is my favorite, and candy. And like, those are all things that I use and I do when I'm having a hard time, especially when I need to focus. I'll be like, oh, okay, I'm going to treat myself, because then I'll be a little bit happier and then I'll want to get this done. I think the hardest thing is that sometimes you got to learn the hard way. You're not always going to be interested in it. And yes, that's going to make it a lot harder for kids with ADHD. But sometimes you're just going to have to get it done, no matter what it takes. When I was younger and I wasn't diagnosed, I have three younger siblings. And I would read when I got home, and my mom would have to take my books away. And I would find other things to do to procrastinate. And then I would get my work done, from like 10 to midnight or after, because there were no distractions. And I had just kind of figured out on my own subconsciously, hey, I can get this stuff done when there aren't a ton of distractions around from my siblings and our pets and whatever. So you got to find out what works for you. You got to find out what works for your students. You got to have empathy and compassion. And you just got to realize ultimately that it's not the same experience as someone who's neurotypical. That's the most important thing. You think you know, but you don't. And it's very important not to be sympathetic, because sympathy and empathy are two different things. You have to try to get down in that hole with them and understand. And if you can't do that, then you can't judge them and you can't give them a hard time, because you have no clue. You don't know them. So, yeah, that's my opinion. I am very opinionated about things, and I think all people need to try to be better in terms of empathy. And we have to teach empathy, because not enough. You can tell a kid something over and over and over, but they copy. They do what you do. You have to show them. You have to consciously be doing it, because they're going to model themselves after people that they love and care about and admire. So you have to be doing it always. And you never know what another kid is dealing with. So you always have to try to remember that. And remember, you don't know their story. You don't know a ADHD kid's story. You don't know ever. So you just got to be empathetic and compassionate.
Yeah. And that's a great case. Yeah. That's a great case for like prioritizing a relationship with someone you're trying to teach also, right? Is that, you know, you have to be modeling it, but also, you know, they're going to listen to what you say if they respect you and care about you and know that you care about them, right?
You can't teach a kid anything unless you have some sort of relationship with them. Mm-hmm. And so especially with my ADHD kids who progress with any, and I'm sorry, I know I should be saying kids with ADHD. I identify with it, so I just kind of word it however. It's part of me, but it's not all of me. So I just want to acknowledge that. Where was I going? Hold on. Gotta get my train back on track. My train of thought. So I got to give empathy to my kids with ADHD who didn't turn that assignment in until maybe the night before grades are due. And it's frustrating sometimes, but ultimately you gotta remember, we're all humans, we're all walking each other home.
Man, I love that quote. Who did you say said it?
Ram Dass, and I got it from Dr. Jody Carrington. She's on Instagram. She's awesome. She's Mama Bear.
Nice. I wanted to go back to the students with ADHD and see if you had any like comments or corrections for what I things I suggested in the last episode, specifically for issues with disrupting classmates, you know, engaging uninterested students, and oppositional behavior. That's mostly what I talked about, like, you know, issues with authority or talking back or arguing or something like that. So I'm curious, like, if we could start, because you mentioned how like working with a student one-on-one helps with students that might be disrupting others in the broader class, right? I'm curious what you do in that moment, though, like in the classroom when a student is disrupting others.
So the first thing I try to do is go over to them in a discreet way and ask them to stop. If it turns into a bigger issue, you want to discuss it with them privately, whether you wait until after class and you pull them aside, or you ask them to hang back in the classroom, or you pull them out into the hallway. Every teacher does something different. And it depends on the kid, too, and the relationship that you have with them. Most teachers will tell you you're not going to be effective in addressing behaviors if you don't have some kind of relationship with the student. I have this one student, and she's an angel. Maybe she's not for another teacher. But if I pull her aside and try to talk to her about running in the hallway, that's going to hit different than if some teacher who she doesn't know pulls her aside and says, don't run in the hallway. She's respectful, but if she's having a bad day, maybe she's going to mouth off. You never know. And there are so many students who are dealing with things other than school in my district. And so there's a little bit more of that sassiness. So you have to keep that in mind. But yeah, I try to address it then and there. If I have a good relationship with the kid, I'll call him on it. You know, like if it's not a big deal and I know the kid and maybe I've had him for 2 years, I'm thinking one kid in specifically from when I was in the higher level at middle school. I just call her on it in front of everybody because we had that kind of relationship. I'd be like, yo, you need to stop. If you need some time, okay. But like, let's turn it around here. And sometimes we would end up going in the hallway, but I called her on her BS. I didn't let her get away with stuff because she knew better. And I knew her better. And I knew, hey, this is not who you are. And she ended up being struggling with some stuff at home. But at the end of the year, she was the first kid who ever said, you never let me get away with stuff. And I learned more because of it. And thank you. I still wonder about her sometimes, and I hope everything turned out okay. But like, yeah, you gotta call them on their BS in whatever way works for them. I've tried restorative conferences. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes the student's ready, sometimes they're not. But you want to involve them in their consequence if you give one, for sure. You want it to be something meaningful, not just like a detention or whatever. Them sitting there is just going to make them seethe and get more pissed off. You've got to involve them and help to show them, hey, this was wrong and this is why. And this is how the harm was done. This is how it hurt people. And then you got to be big enough to look them in the face and say, hey, I'm sorry. Like, that's such an important thing. And that's one of the things that I admire most about myself. I have integrity. If I mess up, I'm going to own it. And so I want, even if it's hard, even if it means I'm going to suffer more, like, I have integrity, I'm a good person, and I own my stuff. And it's really hard sometimes. But if I can teach that to kids too, hey, look, don't lie to me. I know. So you need to just be honest and fess up and own it. Then that's awesome. But we got to teach kids that kind of stuff because people get away with stuff so often now, and it's just cringy. It's so like frustrating when that happens. Mm-hmm. So we need to teach kids to own it and to learn from their mistakes, and mistakes are things that are going to happen, and you got to just own it and move forward, grow from it, learn from it. At least then there will be a benefit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I like that you mentioned a couple of things that I think I probably brought up in the last episode about, like, and I'm glad to hear that you're utilizing them and they work, you know, part of like, you know, correcting behavior by doing it privately, you know, sometimes when it fits that particular student, right? Sometimes calling it out in front of everybody helps, but yeah, especially like with the RSD, that's one thing I recommend. And one thing I recommended trying to include in a 504 IEP if they can.
Some kids really shut down if you call them out in front of everybody. Exactly. And you won't even realize it's an issue until you have a parent emailing you. So yeah, that is definitely not something that works for everybody. And you have to know. And if you don't know, it's better to err on the side of caution and address it privately. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Is there ever an occasion where you have found it to be useful to disclose your own ADHD with students? Or did you say that you did that with parents once or twice? Is that what you mentioned earlier?
Yeah, I did do it with parents once or twice because they had students who were struggling too. And they had issues with other teachers. And I wanted them to know, hey, you're not going to have that problem here. You can trust me. And I'm here to help. And I understand the situation more than you know. So I have disclosed it once or twice. You always kind of wonder if you did the right thing. Sometimes some decisions you never really know. But if it could help to put a parent and a student's mind at ease to know they're not alone, then that's what I want to do. And hopefully I'll be better for it later, and I won't get in some kind of trouble for it, or someone won't use it against me.
Yeah. I know you mentioned, like, earlier you said that maybe other people have critiqued your decision to do that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But, like, in your own experience, though, like, with the parent or the student, did you see it make a difference and help them, reassure them, and things like that?
Yeah, I think generally if you reveal something like that to someone who is really trying their best, they feel like you're on their side. And it's a positive thing, and they kind of respect you more for sharing with them after. And they know that you're a person who's going to advocate for their kid and do what you can. So for me, it's always been positive.
Nice. Yeah.
To disclose that. But there have been situations where I haven't disclosed it too, because I was worried about what would happen. So it's a personal decision. For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pretty intentional about telling all of my clients about my ADHD. This is kind of what I do. I'm already all out there anyway, but I don't think a lot of my clients listen to this though. I'm pretty intentional about it, just because I think first. And with kids too, when I worked with more kids, I'm especially intentional about that, just because I urge parents to tell your kids about their diagnosis, tell them they have ADHD. Like, just, I think I read somewhere once, I don't remember where I read it. But it was talking about how, like, a lot of parents are hesitant to put this ADHD label on their kids. Right. And this someone who was responding to this said, like, but we're, by not giving them the ADHD label, we are forgetting all the other harmful labels they're getting instead, you know, like,
yeah,
lazy, you know, unmotivated, you know, impulsive, you know, selfish. It's another thing we hear a lot.
Kid.
Yep, exactly. So, like, I think, yeah, I'm very intentional about that. And I do a lot of, like, just my own, you know, modeling, just being aware of my ADHD and how it manifests. Like, I am late a lot. I was late today. You know, that's something
I get that. I am too.
My clients are very aware of that. And, you know, sometimes I'll just be like, just completely lose my train of thought. I just be like, nope, it's gone. I don't know where it went. You know, and I think it's important, just because, for one, it helps to normalize it, and give them some maybe language that they're not used to. But it also kind of shows, I think, I don't know, maybe this is conceited, but I feel like people like you and me who have, like, learned a lot about how to manage ADHD and who have been, like, successful in our careers and we're in jobs we love and, you know, we're, you know, have really addressed our ADHD and used it to our advantage. I think that's really important for us to see more.
You also need to have people around you who are supportive.
Mm.
Whether that means your chosen family, your birth family, your friends, but you want to find a place where you work that's supportive. I got into some trouble with work, and my first year teaching, I didn't end up staying up at school. I was looking for something else, and they couldn't quite give it to me. But I also wanted to work with younger kids. But if I don't trust people, I don't really go into that first part. And my impulsivity got me into trouble a little bit a couple of times. And then the second place I worked at, I got myself into a little bit of trouble with impulsivity. And it wasn't anything, like, big or bad or huge. It was just little things that rubbed people the wrong way, and they went to people above me. And so it was really hard. But I want people to know that you can still be successful, and you can figure this out. And this can be managed. you just need people who support you, and you got to be open and honest and own your shiz. You got to own it. Even when it sucks, even when it hurts, even if they're not supportive of your ADHD or your impulsivity, even if they don't get it, you still got to have integrity and you got to own it. And you being a good person with integrity will get you farther than anything else will. At least that's what I like to believe. So yeah, everything will be okay. If things get messed up, or you make a mistake, or you're impulsive, or you have a huge fight with your family because you freaked out because you're RSD, like, you'll move through it, and it'll be something that's small later when you get past it, and it'll all be okay. You just got to learn to manage it and work with it and find your people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you, do you feel comfortable maybe giving an example of when maybe like impulsivity or something has gotten you into trouble at work or has hindered your teaching? If you feel comfortable, like give an example.
Yeah, sure. So I was frustrated one day and I put my foot in my mouth and I was really frustrated and I wasn't getting enough sleep. I was working myself to the bone. I was not implementing self-care. I took on a leadership role, which was extra time and dedication. And then I also took on an extra class, so I didn't have a prep. I did not have a break during the day. The only time I had to myself was my 20-minute lunch, and that is not enough time to eat and run to the bathroom and fill up your water bottle. So I was extremely overwhelmed because I said yes too much that year. And I got really frustrated, and I'm emotional, and I did not have patience in that moment. And I said, screw you guys, my kids. Now, a part of me is frustrated that I got in trouble because I've heard about teachers dropping the F-bomb, cussing at their kids, calling their kids fat. Like, to me, there are so many worse things that I could have done, but I just said, screw you guys. And some of my kids got upset and they went to my principal and I got in trouble for that. Yeah, it's real easy to get in trouble when you have ADHD. It's real easy.
Right?
Yeah. And for a while, I know I owned it, but I really blamed myself. Mm-hmm. And so it was a sensitive topic. And I thought that I was a failure because of it. And I had anxiety attacks. And this was back before I was on meds. So there wasn't a ton for me to do. And my therapist told me, oh, meditation can really help. I'm like, how can it help? Please tell me, like, because this kind of seems like BS to me. How is this just going to be my miracle cure? But it actually does work. It does work. But for me, it wouldn't have been enough. I also need meds and sleep and my mental health to be in a good place and exercise. But it's a starting point if you want to start addressing your behavior in certain ways. I just wish people were more open about it and could talk about it, especially people with ADHD. Like, I felt like it was the end of the world, like I was going to fail, like I couldn't be a teacher because of the way that I acted. And it is possible, but you also have to be in the right kind of environment for you. Like, the higher environment where kids will challenge you, and high school kids can be mean. Like, not even gonna lie, high school kids can be so mean. And I'm not even talking about with each other. I'm talking about, like, them being mean to, like, me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was never raised like that. Ever, 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 ever. I would never talk back to a teacher, ever. So it's a very different time. Yeah, you have to find the right place for you. And it took me a while to do that. And I felt like a failure at first because I didn't find my way. And I wasn't in the right place. And I had to find an environment that would be supportive of me and where I could flourish and where I could be successful. And so with younger kids, that's where it is right now for me. I can be goofy, I can be happy, I can be fun. It's easier to tell where the boundaries are with younger kids because I'm so much older. When I was teaching high school, those kids were a couple of years younger than me, maybe five, maybe six. My younger brother was the same age as them. So I feel like they kind of equated me to an older sibling, and they didn't want to listen to what I had to say. And that was a huge part of why I couldn't be successful. I feel like because my age, I feel like me being a woman also had something to do with it. Me being short, me being high pitched and like trying to be corny. And I felt like they could take advantage of me. So I also had people around me who I really adored and I wanted help from them, but they were not super collaborative. And so that didn't help either. Because I am a collaborator. Like, I'll work by myself if I have to, but I would love to like sit down with you and talk with you and bounce ideas off. Like, that is how I thrive. So that's the kind of environment I need to be in. And just because an environment isn't right for you, it doesn't mean that it doesn't have anything to do with you being a failure or not. It's just, you're going to find what works for you. It's like, you got to help your students find what works for you. Sometimes it just takes longer than we'd like. And as people with ADHD, we get real impatient. So yeah, it can be really hard sometimes. And that's why I'm an advocate, huge advocate for therapy, because you got to get it all out.
So just as we're wrapping up, Taylor, do you have any suggestions for other teachers with ADHD that you have found to be helpful?
I think that there are two main things that you need to remember. You need to make sure that you're taking care of yourself, and you need to make sure that your regular basis in terms of what you need to get done are covered. So I'll start with health. What I mean by that is you need to be eating right. You need to be drinking your water. You need to be taking care of yourself. All the things that teachers regularly struggle with, because if you're a teacher with ADHD, it's going to be even harder to remember all of those things. So you need to figure out some kind of routine or way to help you remember to do all these things that are going to keep you at your best. Because if you're at your best, I think your ADHD is going to be more manageable. One of the things that I love to use on my phone, I have this app called Minimalist. So it's like minimal, like minimal things, like minimal decorations. But it only has one L, Minimalist, because it's like a to-do list. And the reason I actually like it so much is because you can physically cross it off from left to right, and it'll cross the thing off and it'll move to the bottom of your list and it won't be there anymore. That's one of the things I love about to-do lists, like handwritten to-do lists. You can cross it off and then it's not there anymore. So it takes a while to get used to, just because of the minimalist perspective in this app. It's so minimal. Like, there aren't buttons that are labeled. Each action does something different. But then again, I like the action of actually physically moving through the app. I feel like that is nice for my ADHD too. Health is important. Make sure you're taking care of yourself. And cover all your regular bases. So for example, I need to make sure that I'm getting the kitty litter done and for my kitties, and that I'm walking my dogs on a regular basis. And I have enough dog and cat food. And I'm getting the dishes done and my house is clean. Those are all things that need to happen. And if they don't happen, me at work is not going to be as functional, and all the things are going to build up. I'm going to get super overwhelmed and crash. So I think you just have to, again, figure out some kind of routine that works for you, whether it's writing things down or using a to-do list, and just making sure those things are getting done. Because if your basics aren't covered, you're not going to be able to be successful in your job. Because, so for example, if I haven't bought my groceries to make my lunches with, I can't have lunch when I'm at work. If I don't have lunch when I'm at work, I'm not going to be functioning. My blood sugar is going to be low. I'm going to be dizzy and nauseous, and I'm not going to be able to be at my best. And I'm going to lose focus even more. because I haven't eaten and I feel like crap. And so it's just, you got to cover your bases and you got to make sure you're taking care of yourself.
Yeah. Nice. So it sounds like maybe being able to have some sort of control over your home environment makes you feel more in control in work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I think that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Awesome. And it sounds like the food is a big thing too, because that's something I mentioned for students, but it's good to remind everyone that it's good for teachers too, right? Those like protein snacks maybe. So those kind of keep you, yeah. Food makes a huge difference.
Absolutely. Sure. And I think water is so big right now because, for example, sometimes when I go into a classroom, because I push into different classrooms, I don't even want to bring my water bottle. Never mind, actually take a drink of it and pull my mask up to take in some water. So, but the past week, we were back at school after a 2-week break because of the amount of COVID cases in my school. We didn't have enough staff to run in-person classes because of everybody quarantining. So it was our first week back and none of us were used to teaching without drinking so much water. And so many of us had like sore throats and it was bugging us and we had to have cough drops. So water is a big one.
Wow. That's a really good point. Yeah. Especially for people on meds, you know, if you're on a stimulant med, it dehydrates you. So
yeah.
Yeah, definitely very important. Have you found any fun apps to help you remember to drink water?
I think there are some fun ones online, and every time you drink a glass of water, it donates money. But that was a long time ago when I used that one, so we might have to do some searching. I do use MyFitnessPal just to track my food in general when I'm doing a great job with eating right, and it has water in there, so. I try to use that, but I don't have a super fun one.
Nice. That's a good one. Yeah. To track in the fitness app. That's a good idea. Yeah. I was just doing a little app search too. The donating money one I hadn't heard of. That's so awesome. I hope that still exists.
Yeah.
I think I heard of an app that like when you drank water, it like made a plant grow or something.
So that's like, cool. That. I'm still on the lookout for a good habit tracking app too, because if you're tracking your habits and you can kind of see data and patterns, I feel like that could help people with ADHD too.
Oh, in that case, you might like, I think it's called, I think I have it. Something with Pixelist. Have you heard of that?
Okay. No.
I think... I haven't really used it. I haven't gotten the hang of it, but I think it's like, yeah, for habits, you like color in squares.
Ooh.
And then, yeah, then you can like, I don't know, zoom out or something and it makes some sort of picture. I don't know.
That's cool.
Maybe not a picture. Interesting. Yeah, I haven't set it up, so I have nothing to show you, but it's something to check out.
That's okay.
So what about, do you have any tips for anyone who's a principal and who, you know, kind of has teacher employees who are ADHD, or maybe in general, any kind of manager or boss for their employees?
So I think it's so important to let your employees know that they are more than their diagnoses. One of my friends now has a lot of different chronic illnesses, and she has not told her district because she is so terrified of being fired. And that just kills me, because she deserves so much more than that. And she feels that she can't trust them because you never know if you can trust people who are above you. And so I would say try to build trust and be genuine and don't abuse it. I've never personally told anybody above me that I had ADHD because I was advised not to, by my union. because that could be a reason for them to let me go. For example, if making impulsive decisions was an issue and they knew that was going to be an issue in the future, maybe that would be a reason to not keep me, et cetera, et cetera. So I guess that's kind of what I meant when I said earlier that with ADHD, it's easy to get in trouble. I try so hard, and I wish that my employers knew how hard I tried to manage it and be the best that I can. And if that was something I could tell my employers, I would feel so much better. And to know I could trust them, that would make me feel so much more secure. So I would just say, if you are in a position of power, you should be the best human you can be trusting, be empathetic, and let your employees know that their diagnoses wouldn't be a reason to dismiss them. If I had that, I would feel so much more secure and better about myself. And like, I could be my whole self and not have to hide parts of me.
Yeah. I love what you said about knowing, just know that we're trying. That really resonates with me. I think that there is so much moral value affixed to ADHD symptoms. And there's so much about the nature of our disorder that makes it look like we don't care. Mm-hmm. Or people interpret it as we're not trying hard enough, or we're lazy, or you know, we're careless, or things like that, right? So I think that is really valuable, that message. I'm wondering, in terms of like disclosing to your employer, did your union advise you not to disclose it at that moment because it was while there was some disciplinary action going on? Do you know?
Honestly, I don't, and that's something I could probably revisit with them. So I guess it all depends on the people who are in charge and how they view it. I just wish I could feel a little bit more secure in the situation, I guess.
I could, yeah. Well, what's coming to my mind is that ADHD is protected by the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. And mm-hmm. So I think that if you disclose it, they can't discipline you for, you know, something that could be connected to your disability. But I'm wondering if maybe in the moment, if you disclose it while they're disciplining you, you're not really as protected because they can make the argument they didn't know, before they disciplined you. Yeah. But I wonder, and this is just, you know, make your own decision. And like you said, you know, assess the trust that you have. But I do wonder if disclosing it, earlier on before anything, you know, any kind of negative action can be done against you, I wonder if that would make it more protective than not. What do you mm-hmm. think? Does that feel right in your context? Or
I feel like that makes sense. And I feel like if I went and I talked to my union and they felt that it was a good idea at this point, that that's something I would be willing to do. Because honestly, if the people above me knew it, honestly, I'd probably be more open about it. And I might be able to help more people that way. So it's definitely something to think about and consider moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And a really good website that I really like is called the Job Accommodation Network. So it's JAN dot, I think it's org. I really like that because it has a ton of suggestions for accommodations for every type of disability. So they have like a whole section on ADHD, and like they can divide it by like symptom or impairment, you know, what accommodations might help address that. I'm pretty sure they have some for impulsivity, definitely have some for like distraction or restlessness or things like that. Yeah, it's super, super valuable. And I want to say that they probably have advice about disclosing also and when to disclose and making sure that it's .org. Nope, it's not. Wait, let me change it. Job accommodation network. It is askjan.org.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll put it in the show notes too. Yeah, so that's a really good one. And I think, like, obviously, yeah, up to you, do what you want, but it might be, I wonder if it could be useful to disclose and even maybe ask for some accommodations. Like, it can be pretty simple, can be like, if you notice anything, you know, then approach me about it directly, you know, and, you know, talk to me about it. If you notice me being impulsive or something, then please guide me through it or something like that.
Yeah.
But definitely, you know, ask your union, see, because I'm sure they would probably know your district better than I do. So.
Yes. But I appreciate the input because I didn't even know that was a thing. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not saying that it can't go badly. yeah. I disclosed it to my employer and it did not go well. I wasn't disciplined for it, but I did ask for accommodations that they basically said no to. And so were very unhelpful. And there was, there's sketchy ways about, my supervisor telling people I didn't give him permission to tell and like things like that. But, you know, it's just, it's all dependent on the thing. But one thing I would say is a suggestion is like I would be careful about who you disclose to. I mean, if you have a good relationship with your supervisor, I don't think that's a bad thing to tell them. But I think if you do, I would also be very specific. If you're telling anyone except HR, then I would be very specific about who is entitled to this information and to explicitly ask that you be looped into any discussions among other staff about that. I think that's something I could have been more specific about.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not that it was okay. Like your supervisor still can't tell information about you without your permission. It's still bad. But
I'm writing it down. Good things.
Yeah, this is great stuff. And and your advice was wonderful. Cover your bases, take care of yourself. And you had awesome suggestions for students as well.
Sorry, I have one more thing. I think my last thing I would say is if you have students who have ADHD and seem like they're super type A, maybe just try to give them a little grace because I know I am very type A to cope with my ADHD. That has been my coping mechanism. And that was the reason that I was not diagnosed for so long. I like things a certain way and I need things a certain way in order to function because I was not on meds before that point. So just have a little grace if you're a teacher or a human in general who has someone with ADHD in your life.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. I wish I could like spray paint that on every building. Honestly. Have a little grace. Everybody. Yeah, that's wonderful. What a beautiful place to end. I love that. Taylor, thank you so much for being here. I know I have learned a ton. I'm sure other people will as well. Is there anything that, any final notes that you've got bouncing around in your brain or anything you'd like to promote or any kind of, you know, plug?
I think I just want to say thank you. I really appreciate this opportunity. I know, as I said before, your podcast and your website has done a lot for me. So if I can help anybody with this in any way, shape, or form, I'm so happy to do that. And I hope that I can make a difference for someone.
Yeah.
And thank you for everything you do for all of us.
Aw, thank you. That's very nice. Well, thanks a lot. And take care. Good luck. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. You too.
That's all for this episode, but there is plenty more at my website, theadhdmanual.com. That's theadhdmanual.com. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Reddit at The ADHD Manual. Do you have a question, comment, or story? Then I want to hear it. Email me at theadhdmanual@gmail.com. Very special thank you to my brother, Joe Miner, for composing this theme music, and thank you so much for listening. And remember to be kind to yourself. See you next time.